This week on Vaticano, learn about church renewal from Pope Benedict XVI and his writings, celebrate the 100th anniversary of the Council of Shanghai, and explore China-Vatican relations. Learn about June, the month of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. Plus, catch part 3 of our Pontifical Swiss Guard series. For this and more, Vaticano starts now.
Con la processione eucaristica partendo dall'altare.
Beginning from the altar, we will carry the Lord among the homes of our city. We are not doing this to show off or to flaunt our faith, but to invite everyone to participate in the bread of the Eucharist, in the new life that Jesus has given us.
La vita nuova che Gesù ci ha donato.
Pope Francis gave a solemn blessing with the Blessed Sacrament from the steps of the Basilica of St. Mary Major on Sunday, June the 2nd. Cardinal Victor Manuel Fernandez, the prefect of the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith, served as the primary celebrant at the altar for the Mass at the Lateran Basilica. Bishop Baldassare Reina, the vice-regent of the Diocese of Rome, carried the Eucharist in the procession. Crowds lined the streets as the Eucharist was carried under a canopy from the Archbasilica of St. John Lateran to the Basilica of St. Mary Major along the Via Merulana, following the historic route Pope Gregory XIII created for religious processions between the two basilicas during the Jubilee of 1575. Cardinals, bishops, priests, religious sisters, and families walked together in the one-hour procession, singing hymns and reciting prayers. Curious tourists stopped to ask what was happening, and onlookers leaned out of their windows to watch as the real presence of Christ passed by. This year, Pope Francis didn't walk in the Eucharistic procession, but joined at the end for adoration of the Blessed Sacrament and to offer the Eucharistic blessing to the crowd. As more people turn away from the church, the calls for genuine renewal grow louder. But where should this renewal begin? A conference of German theologians sought to find initial answers. On May the 31st, a symposium titled The Renewal of the Church was held in Rome.
The aim of this symposium is to look anew at Christ, because all renewal can only come from Jesus Christ. And He is the newness par excellence. So if we open ourselves to Him and let Him in, open the doors wide to Christ, as St. John Paul said at the beginning of his pontificate, then we will also enable a renewal of the Church. This, in turn, is linked to the renewal of faith. It started with Bishop Gregor Maria Hanke, who spoke about how important it is that we are based on our tradition and start from what Christ has handed down to us, and then renew the Church on this basis. Then there is a moral dimension. Professor Bormann pointed this out in his speech. He underlined that we have to adapt our lives to the present. Professor Nass pointed out that renewal also addresses social life, and that our lives should change as a result. And Julia Denzel provided insights into how this can be achieved, especially among young people.
The symposium was organized by the Societas Theologiae Ecclesiasticae, part of the German association Fundatio Christiana Virtus. Markus Graulich, a member of the association, emphasized what the first step towards renewal must be.
Mother Teresa got to the heart of what renewal for the Church means. When asked what needs to change in the Church, she answered spontaneously, "You and me."
Sie und ich.
It's therefore possible that the Church will also be renewed, as Christ already announced in the Bible, "Behold, I make all things new."
Hello and welcome to this week's Vaticano Updates, the most important news from the Holy Father and the Vatican. In his message for the 110th World Day of Migrants and Refugees, Pope Francis stated that encountering a migrant is akin to encountering Christ. He urged support and solidarity for the millions of refugees forced to leave their homes. The World Day of Migrants and Refugees will be celebrated on September 24th with the theme, God Walks with His People. In a message to participants at a conference on consecrated religious life in Brazil, Pope Francis expressed gratitude for the immense gift of the vocation to consecrated life. He emphasized the need to safeguard and cultivate this vocation daily to produce good fruits in each religious person's life. The pontiff highlighted the importance of maintaining a constant dialogue with Jesus through daily prayer and fidelity to the vows. Pope Francis condemned the killing of 14 Catholics in the Democratic Republic of Congo. He thanked God for their testimony of martyrdom, stating that their throats were slit simply because they were Christians and didn't want to convert to Islam. The media reported that victims were killed by members of ISIS-affiliated militia known as Allied Democratic Forces. Speaking to members of Italian Christian Workers Associations at the Vatican, Pope Francis emphasized that being peacemakers in the style of Jesus Christ is both necessary and risky. He said that interceding for peace goes far beyond mere political compromise because it requires putting oneself on the line and taking a risk. He underlined that in a world marked by conflict and division, their witness as peacemakers is more valuable than ever. During his first weekly general audience in June, the month dedicated to the Sacred Heart, Pope Francis noted the 350th anniversary of St. Margaret Mary Alacoque's first vision of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. He announced plans to publish a document dedicated to the Sacred Heart of Jesus in September. Later in the program, we will share more on the origins of the Feast of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. Thank you for watching this weekly Vaticano Update. Paola Riaza for EWTN Vaticano.
In a few moments, we'll explore the history of China-Vatican relations. The Chinese government has implemented a policy of religious freedom and has not sought to change the Catholic faith. It only hopes that Catholic Church leaders and educators will stand on the side of the Chinese people, free from foreign control. The Holy See and the People's Republic of China have never had formal diplomatic relations. However, under Pope Francis, the two have come closer than ever since the Communist Revolution of 1949, particularly with the 2018 agreement allowing both sides to influence the appointment of Catholic bishops. A century ago, the first Council of the Catholic Church in China convened in Shanghai in May and June of 1924. This historic event brought together over 100 bishops, vicars general, and religious leaders, including native Chinese participants for the first time, who could shape the future of the Church in China. Led by Archbishop, later Cardinal Celso Costantini, the Council aimed to begin ecclesial enculturation, emphasizing the indigenization of the Chinese Church and separating missions from colonial influences.
Nel 1924 la Chiesa in Cina era ancora guidata da missionari stranieri.
In 1924, the Church in China was still led by foreign missionaries. The Council of Shanghai, the first Chinese council, pushed for localization and the creation of a church that was no longer colonial, but distinctly Chinese. This meant a church primarily led by Chinese clergy and bishops.
To commemorate this pivotal event, the Vatican organized a conference. It focused on the Council's historical legacy and shed a light on the current tensions the Church in China endures.
La Chiesa da moltissimo tempo ha una lunga esperienza.
The Church has a long history of adapting to the Chinese context, which can be understood in a cultural sense, as well as in an ecclesial and pastoral sense. Today in China, adaptation to the political context is being promoted.
For the conference, Pope Francis sent a video message.
Remembering the Council of Shanghai can also suggest today new paths to the entire church and open paths to be undertaken with boldness to proclaim and bear witness to the gospel in the present.
One of the most anticipated appearances at the conference was made by the chairman of the Chinese Bishops' Conference, Bishop Shen Bin. Last year, he was unilaterally appointed as Bishop of Shanghai in April of 2023 without a papal mandate, thereby breaking the terms of the contested 2018 Sino-Vatican Accord.
We should not forget the starting point we have today. It was Archbishop Constantini's dedication to rooting the gospel of Christ in Chinese soil, adopting it to Chinese society and culture, and his efforts in preaching in China that faced much opposition.
Bishop Shen Bin, chairman of the Chinese Catholic Bishops' Conference, a government-controlled body not recognized by the Holy See, is the leading prelate of the official Catholic Church in China. This official church is distinct from the underground church, which consists of Catholics resisting government control. China is home to an estimated 10 million Catholics. Bishop Shen emphasized the importance of Sinicization, a policy aimed at making Catholicism more Chinese and aligning it with Communist Party ideology. In China, Catholic priests can only minister in recognized places of worship, where minors under 18 are not permitted. Additionally, religious groups are prohibited from conducting any online religious activities without prior approval from the Provincial Department of Religious Affairs. The Vatican Secretary of State, Cardinal Pietro Parolin, also spoke at the conference.
This obedience to the Pope not only does not harm the love each must have for their country, but purifies, renews, and revives it. The Pope wants Chinese Catholics to love their country and be the best among its citizens. The Pope loves all nations as God, whose representative he is, loves China, your noble great nation, and does not place it after any other nation.
Reflecting on the 100 years that have passed since the Council of Shanghai, we should heed Cardinal Parolin's words that serving the Pope does not mean you are betraying your country. Obedience to the Pope, he said, enlivens love for country.
We see in the heart of the Lord Jesus, the source of our sacraments, the source of our life, and the source of our healing.
June is the month of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. This year, the solemnity falls on June the 7th. The date changes each year because it's celebrated on the Friday after the Corpus Christi octave. The feast dates back to 1673. A French nun from the Order of the Visitation of Holy Mary in eastern France began to receive visions about the Sacred Heart. Jesus appeared to Sister Margaret Mary Alacoque in a chapel in Paray-le-Monial. He revealed ways to venerate his Sacred Heart and expressed his immense love for humanity. He appeared with his heart visible outside his chest, on fire, and surrounded by a crown of thorns. Jesus told Sister Margaret Mary,
"My Sacred Heart, it is so intense in its love for men, and for you in particular, that not being able to contain within it the flames of its ardent charity, they must be transmitted through all means."
Father Krzysztof Marcjanowicz says that the cult of the Heart of Jesus is very intimate, and it's been reflected in the church tradition in the centuries from when a soldier at Calvary pierced Jesus' side to confirm his death.
St. John Chrysostom, one of the great fathers of the church, in one of his homilies described this moment and says that this is the beginning of the sacraments of the Church, especially baptism, the water that washes us, and the Eucharist, blood that nourishes us, that gives us life.
These visions continued for 18 months. On June the 16th, 1675, Jesus told Sister Margaret Mary to promote a feast that honored his Sacred Heart. He also gave Sister Margaret Mary 12 promises made to all who venerate and promote the devotion to the Sacred Heart.
I will give them all the graces necessary for their state of life. I will give peace in their families. I will console them in all their troubles. I will be their refuge in life and especially in death. I will abundantly bless all their undertakings. Sinners shall find in my heart the source and infinite ocean of mercy. Tepid souls shall become fervent. Fervent souls shall rise speedily to great perfection. I will bless those places wherein the images of my Sacred Heart shall be exposed and venerated. I will give to priests the power to touch the most hardened hearts. Persons who propagate this devotion shall have their names eternally written in my heart. In the excess of the mercy of my heart, I promise you that my all-powerful love will grant to all those who will receive communion on the first Fridays. For 9 consecutive months, the grace of final repentance, they will not die in my displeasure, nor without receiving the sacraments, and my heart will be their secure refuge in that last hour.
Sister Margaret Mary died in 1690 and was canonized by Pope Benedict XV on May the 13th, 1920. The Vatican was hesitant to declare a feast of the Sacred Heart, but as the devotion spread throughout France, the Vatican granted the Feast of the Sacred Heart of Jesus to France in 1765.
Such a celebration is established, and it is interesting in Rome only for the Archconfraternity of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. And at the beginning, it remains like that for over almost a century, until Pius IX gives the celebration for the entire Universal Church in 1856.
In 1856, Pope Pius IX designated the Friday following the Feast of Corpus Christi as the Feast of the Sacred Heart of Jesus for the Universal Church. Ever since, the month of June has been devoted to the Sacred Heart of Jesus and his immense love for us all. Next on Vaticano, we resume our series on the Pontifical Swiss Guards. Before beginning the training regimen to become a Pontifical Swiss Guard, potential recruits make a come-and-see visit to the Vatican. Leading this particular group was Alabardiere Nico Kaufmann, who guided them through the week's activities.
Today morning, they were participating in a general audience. They were able to witness how the Holy Father has entered St. Peter's Square.
The guards' goal is to provide them with a closer look at what would become their duties and responsibilities.
Two words. In order to summarize the duty of a Pontifical Swiss Guard, acriter fideliter, loyal and brave, we're here to serve Francis or his successors as well, and we need to do this with utmost fidelity, as well as, if need arises, naturally, we are here to protect him.
For us Swiss Guards, the protection of the Holy Father is for us the main mission, number one. Therefore, it means that when the Pope is in movement, when you'll see those in suits and ties around him in addition to the gendarmerie, there is also the Pontifical Swiss Guard.
Anticipating danger and neutralizing threats are some of the key responsibilities in protecting the Holy Father. Every time Pope Francis attends public events and celebrates holy masses, whether that be abroad on apostolic trips or at home in Vatican City, he puts his personal safety on the line.
quando andiamo all'estero.
When we go abroad, especially on apostolic journeys, we also go there to give support and close protection of the Holy Father. For us, it is a very special moment, but it's also a moment where for us, the level of attention is at its highest because we go abroad. We don't play at home.
Pope Francis's desire to travel to the peripheries can create many authentically beautiful but challenging moments for a security task force. Unexpected and intense situations can arise without warning, and nearly catastrophic moments and developments have at times made headlines with Pope Francis and also other recent pontiffs.
Security was beefed up following the uproar in the Mideast caused by comments the Pope made about Islam last month.
In 2007 and 2008, attempts were made on Pope Benedict XVI, the first at a Christmas Vigil Mass and the second on the Pope Mobile in St. Peter's Square. It goes back even further. In November of 1970, there was an attempted stabbing on Pope St. Paul VI's life at the airport in Manila, Philippines. And in perhaps the most infamous moment, on May the 13th, 1981, Pope St. John Paul II was shot four times in St. Peter's Square while riding in the Pope Mobile.
We have vowed to give our lives for the Holy Father. And we stand behind this vow. That is what connects us all the most. This oath to be able to stand on May 6th and to be able to swear not only in front of my biological family, but also in front of my guard family. That is serious.
Leading up to the swearing-in ceremony, new recruits complete the security test to check their preparedness. In this part of the exam, they practice with tasers to neutralize an assailant. Practicing safety is also of the utmost concern to avoid harming innocent tourists and pilgrims.
So the best thing I have to do when it comes to using weapons is common sense on the whole level. So unless I have training, I shouldn't touch a weapon, because all accidents happen with loaded weapons. It always happens in stupidity, in their negligence.
Inside the armory of the Swiss Guard barracks, Alabardiere Gianluca Andreato is responsible for the maintenance of uniforms, protective gear, and weapons, which the guards wear on duty at major events such as the swearing-in ceremony, Christmas Vigil, and Easter Mass.
We have here some special armament. It's not specially protected, not thicker, but it has a special saint in the front. We have here Niklaus von der Flüe, also Brother Klaus in German. He is our national saint and also one of our protective saints of the Swiss Guard. We have the breastplate, we have a backplate, then a collar, what's inside, and the big arm plates. They are all strapped together with leather bands. We can see them here. They are strapped together, ones around here. The helmet is in the Mourinho form. We have here the piece where the feather enters, and the feather goes all around till here. We have here the emblem of our founder Pope. Inside there is leather and nothing else. So it's really not comfortable to wear, but Jesus suffered at the cross, we suffer with the helmet. Those wall guns.
Gianluca continues by showing the various rifles, uniforms,
medals,
and swords. He admits, though, that the most potent of these cannot be found in this room.
Our commander said what Padre Pio quoted. The strongest weapon his machine gun is the Rosencrantz, the rosary. And it is like that. So I think we also have a weapon here that can have lethal consequences.
On the next episode of Vaticano, we bring you to the final installment in our series on the Pontifical Swiss Guard, where we look towards the Guard's future, and even further ahead, to life after the Guard for those finishing their service.